Good evening. Forgot the words of the sutra because I've been at Empty Nest, and they say different words. For a minute, I didn't know which words I was supposed to use. Very confusing. Welcome. Have you been here before?
Come on, Wednesday.
That's why I've seen you. Yes. Well, I'm glad you came. Let's do introductions.
Kelly.
Ron. Jeffrey.
Andy.
Sonia.
Britt.
Kate.
Lucy. Wendy.
And Angie. Those roses are for Donna Lynn because she took such good care of me at Empty Nest. I was hoping she would be here. And I'm a little afraid that she maybe has come down with what I had because I got the flu while I was up there and had to come home and be taken care of. And she took such wonderful bodhisattva-like care that all I could think was to get some roses for her. So I'll take them by the house. But she was amazing. So we're at chapter 14 of the Diamond Sutra, which is a very ancient document that I marvel over, just trying to imagine where it came from, how it appeared in the world like this. It's not like anything else that I've ever seen. And every time I go into it, I just have the same feeling of just amazement. This is a long chapter, and I've tried to figure out whether we should try to tackle the whole thing or do half of it today and another half next week. Might be more sensible to do it next week. I don't know what the cutoff place would be, but maybe if we read the first page and the second page and leave the third page and the other part until next week. So it's 221, 222. Somebody want to read? Thank you.
I don't have a
copy. I think I have an extra one. No, I guess I don't. I guess I gave them all away.
Of this dharma, the venerable Subhuti was moved to tears. Wiping his eyes, he said to the Buddha, "How remarkable, Bhagavan, how most remarkable, Sugata, is this dharma teaching that the Bhagavan speaks for the benefit of those beings who seek the foremost of paths, for the benefit of those who seek the best of paths, and from which my own awareness is born. Bhagavan, I have never heard such a teaching as this. They shall be the most remarkably blessed of bodhisattvas, Bhagavan, who hear what is said in the sutra and give birth to a perception of its truth." And how so? Bhagavan, a perception of its truth is no perception of its truth. Thus does the Tathagata speak of a perception of its truth as a perception of its truth. Hearing such a Dharma teaching as this, Bhagavan, is not remarkable. It is not remarkable that I should trust and believe it. But in the future, Bhagavan, in the final epoch, in the final period, in the final 500 years of the Dharma ending age, Bhagavan, those beings who grasp this Dharma teaching and memorize it, recite it, master it, and explain it in detail to others, they shall be most remarkably blessed. Moreover, Bhagavan, they shall not create the perception of a self, nor shall they create the perception of a being, the perception of a life, or the perception of a soul. They shall create neither a perception nor no perception. And why not? Bhagavan, the perception of a self is no perception, and the perception of a being, a life, or a soul is also no perception. And why not? Because Buddhas and Bhagavans are free of all perceptions. This having been said, the Buddha told the Venerable Subhuti, "So it is, Subhuti, so it is. Those beings shall be most remarkably blessed, Subhuti, who are not alarmed, not frightened, and not distressed by what is said in the sutra." And how so? Subhuti, what the Tathagata proclaims as the best of perfections is, in truth, no perfection. Moreover, Subhuti, what the Tathagata proclaims as the best of perfections is also proclaimed by countless Buddhas and Bhagavans. Thus, it is called the best of perfections. So too, Subhuti, is the Tathagata's perfection of forbearance, no perfection. And how so, Subhuti? When King Kali cut off my limbs, my ears and nose, and my flesh, at that moment I had no perception of a self, a being, a life, or a soul. I had neither a perception nor no perception. And why not? At that moment, Subhuti, if I had had the perception of a self, at that moment, I would have also had the perception of anger. Or, if I had had the perception of a being, the perception of a life, or the perception of a soul, at that moment, I would have had the perception of anger. And how so, Subhuti? I recall the 500 lifetimes I was the mendicant Kshanti, and during that time I had no perception of a soul, nor did I have the perception of a being, the perception of a life, or the perception of a soul. Therefore, Subhuti, fearless bodhisattvas should get rid of all perceptions in giving birth to the thought of unexcelled perfect enlightenment. They should not give birth to a thought attached to a sight, nor should they give birth to a thought attached to a sound, a smell, a taste, a touch, or a dharma. They should not give birth to a thought attached to a dharma, nor should they give birth to a thought attached to no dharma. They should not give birth to a thought attached to anything. And why not? Every attachment is no attachment. Thus, the Tathagata says that bodhisattvas should give gifts without being attached. They should give gifts without being attached to a sight, a sound, a smell, a taste, a touch, or a dharma.
Thank you. So the remarkable part of this is starting in Subhuti's tears, that by the force of hearing that however many good things you can do and how much merit you can gain, it's nothing compared to what it is to help other people. That's the last thing that Buddha told him over here. Someone grasped at one four-line gatha of this Dharma teaching and made it known and explained it to others, the body of merit produced as a result would be immeasurably infinitely greater. And hearing this, Subhuti realized suddenly that it was about not himself, and was very moved. There was a time when early in my practice when hearing Coleman talk sometimes, especially in Sesshin, I would find tears coming to my eyes, even though I wasn't feeling sad or even moved in the ordinary way. And finally, I asked Coben, what are these tears that keep coming? And there was a long pause, and then he said, they're Dharma tears. Dharma tears. So Chao Ming calls this detachment from form. You see, Ron was just reading attachment to this, attachment to that, attachment to no attachment, attachment to attachment, any kind of attachment, attaching thought is a nothing thought, you could say. It's just getting in the way. The other thing in here is that first paragraph where Subhuti says how remarkable this Dharma teaching is that he's being listening to, that he speaks for the benefit of those beings who seek the foremost of paths, for the benefit of those who seek the best of paths, and from which my own awareness is born. That the teaching, from the teaching, Subhuti's awareness is being born. And in a way, it's like it's something in us that we already know, but someone else speaks it first, and we recognize it in some very deep way. So Red Pine says about this, this is known as the sudden enlightenment school of Buddhism, in which the emotional impact of a teaching does what meditation and reflection are unable to do. Subhuti has gone from an arhat to a bodhisattva. Right there on the spot. Interesting. Buddha reminds Subhuti that freedom from perception by itself liberates no one. Even though we can be in the world and not of the world, that's not liberation. And there are lots of people floating around and they're above it all or below it all or something like that. And things have no power over them anymore. But that's what, and they're now talking a lot about spiritual bypassing, of taking a spiritual stand as if you weren't a real live human being in a real hard world. And he's saying that perception, being free from perception, is not liberation. Though that's what Subhuti thought when he started out. He thought, everything is emptiness. Now I got it. And he practiced really, really hard. Freedom from perception by itself liberates no one, whereas those who uphold this teaching join the lineage of teachers of humans and gods that extends throughout the 10 directions and the 3 periods of time. If it's all connected, the teaching is all connected from where it began, and we don't know where it began, to this very moment, right now, here. It's much bigger than we think, than we can think. Subhuti realized that true selflessness is practiced by those who help others put an end to suffering. He realized that true selflessness is practiced by those who help others put an end to suffering, as the Buddha does through this teaching. Zheng Yi says, one of the old Chinese teachers, "Shravakas only cut off the obstruction of the passions, but not the obstruction of what they know." So we can get pure, clean, and still hold on tight to all of our opinions and everything we think we know about everything. Although they eliminate the attachment to a self, the attachment to dharmas remains. Subhuti not only realized the emptiness of attachment to a self, he also realized the emptiness of attachment to dharmas, and was able to see the true appearance of all dharmas. So Red Pine says this, instead of stressing, and this is based on, this having been said, the Buddha told the Venerable Subhuti that perception is no perception. This having been said, the Buddha said, "So it is, Subhuti. Those beings shall be most remarkably blessed, Subhuti, who are not alarmed, not frightened, and not distressed by what is said in this sutra." How so, Subhuti? What the Tathagata proclaimed is the best of perfections is in truth no perfection. What the Tathagata proclaims as the best of perfections is also proclaimed by countless Buddhas and Bhagavans. Thus it's called the best of perfections. So the essence of this is also the essence of the Heart Sutra, which at the end talks about fear. No fear. Depending on prajna, no fears exist. And at this point in this sutra, it begins to talk about how powerful this is, and that the truth is, in many ways, very scary, and that you have to be brave in order to really take it in. So Red Pine says, instead of stressing freedom from perception, says Subhuti does, the Buddha stresses freedom from fear, the absence of the psychological or emotional trauma from believing a doctrine that turns out to be devoid of any doctrine, and that the Buddha calls the best of doctrines. Everyone relies on some sort of teaching, but the best of teachings taught by all Buddhas deprives those who would follow it of any teaching at all. At the same time, the Buddha's statement exposes the relative value of all teachings, including his own. It isn't fixed. This teaching first strips away the dharmas of beginning practitioners. Finally, it strips away the emptiness of arhats. Each of these is a terrifying experience. How can we not have a self? How can there not be dharmas to cultivate? What is left if emptiness is empty? Can such a teaching be taught by anyone other than a Buddha, or practiced by anyone other than a bodhisattva? So there'll be more about this as time goes on. But then the question comes up, what is Buddha? Can such a teaching be taught by anyone but a Buddha? And that, in a sense, is how this adds up, this chapter, which we don't have time to add up tonight. But it's a question to take home with you. Kobino always often said to us how much he wondered about the mind of Buddha. What was Buddha? What was the mind of Buddha? And was Shakyamuni Buddha, was of course one of many, and what was it that enlightenment was for him? And if we all participate in the same breath life world, then we too are participating in the enlightenment mind of Buddha. And what is that? And something about Subhuti's tears and being able to hear a Buddha wakens the Buddha in our own being, so that we become well, I can't say more without messing it up. If we strip it all away, if there's nothing left, what's left? Everything. Because what we strip is ideas. What we're dropping is all our fancy ideas and stories about what we think and what we think we are, and all of our theories about what it means and what we mean and all of those. But if those drop away, which they do in Zazen, we begin to see them as a story that's just making itself up, way beyond anything that we ourselves are doing. It's just chattering along, having its own amusements and its own life. And if we stop getting serious about what's going on and stop believing in the reality of that, then suddenly all the theories that we have about everything drop away, and we're present. And we are a presence. We are the presence. Each one of us. The Buddha presence in the world. And that was Subhuti's experience. That's what Buddha's bringing out first for Subhuti, little by little. So he says, perceptions are not perceptions. We're perceiving all the time. Oh, that's pink. Look at that beautiful pink and those reds. And we have names for everything. As we said last week, we're always naming everything and thinking we know it because we know the name. And that's not it. Perceptions won't get us very far. So the dropping away is scary. They say in Zen it's like being at the top of a 10-foot pole and stepping off. So I will leave you at that. With this, which covers all of it. And this is back to back tonight because I had to make two pages. I couldn't help it. Thank you. Thank you. So are there questions?
Who is that King Kali?
Oh, King Kali. He was one of the many forms that Buddha took throughout history. And that story is to show how endurance is possible if you don't take yourself seriously. You can be torn apart. And of course, it's really pointing to our fate, which means that we're going to die. And if we're clinging to ourself as we get to that point, then it's going to be really tough. And that if we're interested in the reality of things, including our life, that we study this carefully, study King Kali carefully, because he knew how to do it. Pretty gross, but it's vivid. Anything? Yes.
I heard talk about the deathless. At the Philip Moffat's Sangha, there was a guest speaker a couple months ago, and it made a strong impression. And I'm wondering if the concept of the deathless is, if you feel like that's related or the same thing as the freedom from perceptions.
Yes. Yes, it is. That's exactly what this is pointing to and how it culminates. Yeah.
And the fear aspect, I'm curious, can you speak more to that? I mean, I haven't been reading it, maybe.
Yes.
It's a greater depth about freedom. Where is that fear? Is that the same fear? Freedom from fear in the absence. I mean, I suppose that a lot of our fear comes from our perceptions, is that?
It comes from our attachment. I think more than anything, as long as we're hanging on so tightly, then we're really scared. And we naturally just do that in every way, attached to our ideas and our body and our mind and all of it. And sometime we have to kiss it all goodbye. So, it's hard. It's really, really hard. Sometimes we think of spiritual practice as this sort of very nice, peaceful thing, but it's tough, really tough, when it comes down to our real living life. But it's also wonderful. It's truly inspiring. And it gives us our reason for being. So it's 8 o'clock.